You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Actually, she's a very funny person and she's very smart. She was like trying to like, sit down on the chairs. Oh, Mariko, do you have a tattoo? And I said, no. Have you ever arrested? That was like her question.
Have you ever been arrested?
Questions. I was like, and at that moment, I didn't know.
She's like, do you have drugs?
Arrested. I was like, what does it mean? I was like super confused. I was like, like that. So that was the first moment with her.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of 2020. I'm Siobhan Cronin here with Ben and Corey as always. Super excited to return for part two with my dear friend Mariko.
Yeah,
fabulous
buddy!
Cellist. Yeah. Fabulous cellist.
This is another morning episode for us when we're recording it. These always seem to be a bit more tame. So I think the number of F-bombs that Ben dropped was severely reduced.
Yeah, this one's pretty like all ages friendly, I would say.
I wouldn't go quite that far.
Okay. The thing maybe hide your kids.
PG-13.
But you gotta like match the people, and like Mariko is so like demure and eloquent and cultured that like I feel bad saying anything like that because she just doesn't deserve it.
There you go. So Ben showed some respect in this one. We get to hear a bit about the Japanese thing. Yeah. Well, we get to hear about Japan, and you know, where she comes from and a little bit of the culture there, as well as more tour stories, including stuff with Madonna, and just really cool behind the scenes stuff with Star Set. So check it out. Part two.
Prince. Kinda.
All right, Ben, part two with Mariko.
Welcome to another episode of 2020. This is our take dose because Ben forgot to hit record. My name is Corey Peza here as always with Siobhan Cronin and luckily Ben this time. How are you guys doing?
Good. I'm super excited to return for part two with my dear friend Mariko, a fabulous cellist. In part one, we talked a lot about how she got started, getting into rock music, listening to American rock radio in Japan, a lot of cool experiences and tidbits, hearing about how she kind of forged her own path, getting into sort of the crossover music genre.
My favorite part was when I realized that she's done more than I have by the time she was eight. And she looks a decade younger than all of us, and she's technically older than all of us.
That's like everyone in Japan. I'm telling you, it's like the picture of Dorian Gray. Like all of us are aging here in the United States, while all the Japanese people are just getting younger as they get older. It's amazing.
Is that true? Because I feel like you're not the average person, and if you're the average person in Japan, then like I give up on life. And if you're admiring us as Japanese people because we won World War II, maybe you guys should get your own identity.
I'm not sure about that, but
we're sorry for him in advance.
I'm kidding.
Feel free to just ignore any uncomfortable questions.
We're sorry in advance and retrospect and everything else that happens.
We're sorry for everything that's happened for the last 100 years, in fact.
But we all have like black hairs and then we almost like having like black or a little bit like a dark brown eyes. So a lot of people is willing to have like blonde hair like Siobhan. And then sometimes we wear the color contact lens, you know, to just get the change. So I think at some point or like some like in our head, we are willing to have like a different culture or like a different blood. I don't know, in our mind. So I don't know. We didn't think about, you know, we look young or something like that. We never thought in Japan.
Well, what I will say is that everyone's skin in Japan is amazing, which might have something to, sure, it's genetics, but yeah, the lifestyle, it was so cool for me to get the chance to go there. You know, you can just tell everyone's super healthy and I don't know.
We didn't think like that way either, but because we love, you know, the hamburger stuff.
So funny.
It's hard to find a good hamburger place in Japan. If we find, it's going to be expensive. So, yeah. In-N-Out burgers.
Nice. That's actually something interesting. So Siobhan has been to Japan. Ben, you haven't been, right? I haven't been.
I've only astrally projected myself in dreams.
Right. So for someone who hasn't visited Japan, what would you recommend as, like, you know, you got a week to go there. What would you recommend for anyone visiting? What should people check out to get the full cultural experience?
So there's a many temples in Kyoto. It's not in Tokyo. Tokyo has a few temples too. I recommend to go to Kyoto. It's very beautiful, ancient city. Many
Kyoto?
Yeah, Kyoto. Yep, yep. It's a very wonderful city. And if we go to Tokyo, you know, it's a very, very busy cities. If you go to Roppongi, there's many high buildings, or even like Shinjuku, they have like a Kabukicho, which is like almost like a Las Vegas Strip. They have many, many bars, girls strips, boys strips.
Like strips as in strip clubs?
Is it Macau? Or don't you guys have like the biggest gambling in the world? Isn't there like some crazy island? Am I thinking of something else? There's like some crazy... Am I confusing myself? Like there's an island that's like in the most insane of gambling in the world.
Oh, that is Macau, I think. China.
You're Macau.
Yeah.
Oh, China. I confuse China with Japan.
Once again, we're sorry in advance and in retrospect.
Crossing my wires. It's not because of any Japanese. It's just because I don't know where things are. It's not her.
It's fine. You don't have to apologize for being American and not knowing geography.
It's part of Asia. So.
Well, she lives in Las Vegas, okay? And then I thought island. And then I'm like, doesn't speak my language. It's a hard language. Chinese, in my defense, is a hard language like Japanese. So that's how I cross my wires.
Actually, so Japan was not allowed to have a casino hotel until a few years ago.
Wow.
They changed the law and they are trying to build up the casino hotel maybe in 2 years or something. And they're going to have the shows there.
Do you think the Japanese guys went to Macau and they're like, we got to do this better?
No, Macau is such a like you know historical casino place. So, yeah, that was beautiful though. I mean, maybe.
Well, as an American that visited Japan, I don't know how it's possible to see all the things in 1 week because Tokyo alone, from my experience, was huge. I mean, it's like I can't even describe what it's almost like going to the future. It's like you show up and you're like, wow, this is what the world will look like in 20 years. Yeah. Super organized, super clean. Tons of people. Somehow
that's kind of
it
what
all
I
works.
Meant, though. That's what I meant is like if you can't see everything, if you only have a week,
sure,
like what's
sure.
Is it better to see what you know that side, the bright flashy side, or is it better to go to you know you mentioned the temples and the more you know probably less touristy things?
Yeah, I think depends on what you would like to see or what kind of you know experience you want to have. If you wanna see the nature things. I definitely recommend to go to more like a north side, which is more like a having the green.
Well, what are we going to see in Japan? Like, I don't like. Am I seeing tigers? Am I seeing bald eagles? What's flying around? Is there like tarantulas there? Like, if we're going to go see the wild, like, is there? What are we looking at?
We don't have eagles. But we have tigers in the zoo.
That's really sad. You don't tigers have eagles? The tigers are in the zoos. So wait, what is indigenous to Japan?
You list the indigenous species.
Maybe
please.
Bear.
There's Japanese bears?
Pikachu.
Pokemon? Wait, can you get special Pokemon that Brock can't get in Miami in Japan? Like if I walk around with my Pokemon app, am I going to see like a Tyrannosaurus Rex that's not available in Iowa?
Deer.
Deer?
Yeah. But if you go to Okinawa, there's a super beautiful ocean. I mean, if you compare with Miami, maybe... kind of same, but
it's probably more beautiful. Miami is
less Cubans
can be trash.
I just say like there's like syringes coming up on South Beach. It's cool. It looks good from like you know the hell like the whatever you're doing over.
Yeah, but once you
boat.
Meet the people, you're like, okay, I think I'll leave.
Yeah.
Well, you're like here. I'm glad I have mace on me.
No, but that's cool. Okinawa. Yeah, I mean I haven't been there, but that's.
But wait, so there's cool fish. Beautiful. No, I'm trying to understand because I love animals, and I'm just
well,
trying
she's
to
saying
figure
there's
out,
a
like,
beach there.
Okay, so what's at the beach?
I have a great story though. Okay. My cousin, My mom's side of the family is living in the south area, which we call the Kyushu, Kita Kyushu. So my cousin's friend found that dog when he was like elementary school boy. And then, oh, I got a dog. So he brought back to the, you know, his home, and then he was like raising him up, like, you know, the dog up. But he didn't bark. Like, even 1 year later, 2 years later. So he was wondering, and he took that dog to the vet. And he's, oh, yeah, he doesn't bark. That's obvious because it's a raccoon.
Raccoon.
You had a raccoon. You're like, come here, doggy.
This is obvious because raccoon.
I like how like just casual that is. Oh, the reason your dog doesn't bark is because it's actually a raccoon. Yeah.
I want to know what a Japanese raccoon looks like, where it might be confused with a dog.
I don't know. I didn't see that one, so I don't know how it looks like. But I think it's the exact same way as American raccoon.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. So let's pick up, not to interrupt you, but coming out of the last episode, part one, if you haven't checked it out, go listen to it, 2020-D.com. So we talked a lot about, you know, how you got your first Cirque du Soleil world tour experience. How long were you doing that for? And, you know, at what point did that end or transition into the next thing? Like, what did that lead to after that? Yeah, when you the Michael Jackson tour, like, for how long were you doing that, and like, how did that change or shift your path into the next thing?
So I did that tour from 2013 May until 2014 August, and end of the tour, that was a place was in Mexico. Founder of Cirque du Soleil, his name is Guy, came to see our show because it's, you know, last place to perform. And we got a chance to talk with him. And then, first of all, I didn't know him about, you know, what kind of person. Even I didn't know he was there during performance. And after the show, oh, he seems like a founder Guy. And then, you know, I said, nice to meet you. And then, thank you so much for having me, you know. And he asked me if you're interested in working for more shows in of Cirque du Soleil. And I would love to. And then I didn't hear anything, you know, just say, and I thank you so much, and then bye, right? And the tour ended. But same time, you know, those tour changed my life. And then I wanted to keep going, you know, have a more like experience, not going back to.
Ignore him.
For anyone not listening to or watching the video, turn on the YouTube cast to see how Ben is not using his words to derail the conversation.
Yeah, he's getting creative with it now.
So I remember in July, and I heard my friend was posting on Instagram, on Facebook, that the band who got an Oricon chart, like a number one or three, I forgot, Star Set is looking for the violinist and cellist. And if whoever interested in, contact me. And then she put the YouTube link of Star Set. And then that was a dressing room right before the show, the, you know, Michael Jackson Remote World Tour. And I listened, and oh my God, that was my demons. And wow, this song is amazing. And I would love to work with them, because the, you know, working with a rock band was one of my dreams. And, you know, and I contacted with them, and then they said, yeah, sure, come on and join us. Yeah.
That was easy.
Yeah, that was easy. Oh my God. So, and then I just realized, okay, I need to get a working visa, because during the tour, Cirque du Soleil provided us the working visa, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah. Did you see his mask said, Mariko is my hero?
Oh my God. Oh my God. How did you do that?
This is like something from Hyde's show. They have, you remember, Japan. They have the...
I ordered this from Japan.
Oh my god. Is it truth? Oh my god, that's super cool. I want to videotape it.
You can just watch it. Corey's going to edit it and put it in like long form in beautiful 1080p.
I'll be cutting this entire part out.
Yeah, this entire part.
Anyway, so ahead. Go on. So Starset, so you got invited to join Starset.
And then after the tour, I get a working visa by myself and then came back to the U.S. to join them. That was, I think, October? Yeah.
In 2014?
Yes.
So that, for everyone listening, not to interrupt you, that was like the early days of Starset. This was like van touring, driving. Yeah.
First one. First of all, I got a chart. Not the chart.
The stems. Yeah.
Yeah. From them. And I was like, okay, there's a bunch of string sections. And then which notes I should play? And at that moment, I was like playing violin and cello. So, okay, which songs I should play the violin and the cello? I had no idea. And they had no idea either. Yeah, just do whatever you want. And then, I practiced and then I went to the US, right? And then I don't remember which place or which states, but landed. Nice to meet you, right? And then go to the venue. Okay, take a 20 minutes, 30 minutes chaos sound check. Even not the rehearsal. And then after that, like a wrap up, and then okay, let's go to the show.
First star set experience.
Wow, like I was like, oh my god, this is wild. But that was so much fun, and then we did until December. I think in September, at the same time, I got a phone call from Zumanity by Cirque du Soleil, which is a resident show in Las Vegas. And then they asked me if I was interested in working on Zumanity as a Japanese character, kind of a Japanese anime. Do you know that Evangelion? Evangelion's a Japanese famous comic or anime.
Okay.
It's okay. It's totally fine. And then my character was like, look like that.
Okay.
Basically, so founder of Cirque du Soleil, he made my position for me. And then they made a new character on Zumanity. They didn't have a cello character before. So I said yes. And after Starset tour came to Vegas directly, and then that was like my first, life.
Nice. When you say character, is that just like you're still just performing, right? You're just in a, is it a costume? Like I've never seen the show, so I'm not sure.
Oh yeah, so Cirque du Soleil has like a own characters. Zumanity is a comedy music. Circus mm-hmm. shows.
Yep.
And then the old musicians is in the costume.
Okay. Yep.
But old musician is wearing the black costume. But my character was like blue and a robot. Like sexy robot type of like having an LED here.
Wait, did you have like a costume designer that was like instead of black?
Oh, actually, I have.
We're hold going on. To.
I have a question.
Wait, hold on. Wait for it.
Yeah, she's gonna bring that, but we can find some pictures
blue.
Too.
Yeah.
But hold on a second. Like black for rock and roll, and then blue. Like, isn't that amazing to be innovative? And then you're like, we're gonna make blue robots.
No, the Cirque du Soleil costumes, like the whole set, is super, super cool to see. It's super creative. But go ahead. Sorry, Marco.
Oh my god, it's amazing.
It's very expensive. So when I was with Michael Jackson on the tour, I was wearing the almost like a bra, like a sparkling bra, and then pants, which is half short pants, half long pants. It's very confused for rock style.
Yeah.
and having crazy makeup. And when I was at the Zumanity, it was like this.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing.
Wow.
You'll have to send us, you'll have to take a picture of that and send it. We'll post it on the screen.
So let me ask you this, because if anyone who has ever seen Cirque du Soleil, it's amazing, amazing physicality that goes into those shows as far as the performers that are doing the physical feats. How's it being in the band versus watching all these people do crazy stuff in front of your eyes? Because it's like you have Jedi musicians that play with Michael Jackson, and we've imported this crazy Japanese cellist that could do everything. And then there's these people doing flips and moving their bodies and dropping from the ceiling with their hair and all kinds of stuff that you think isn't real, but it's like 1,000,000% real.
Yeah, so that's the things too. Thank you so much for reminding me about that. So watching the aerialists, especially aerialists, they have a risk. Of course, the acrobats too. If they failed, it's really like related with their lives, right? Could be die. So it's amazing how much risks they carried.
Every day, yeah.
Every moment. Tiny cue still, just flipping, just only 1 second, but still risky, right? But so like watching those stuff and performing, it definitely changed my mind too. You know, we can't just enjoy our music during performing. How much, you know, I can appreciate that. You know, we don't die.
Yeah, right.
Like a mistake, you know, stuff. It's not great for their, you know, our outcome, of course. But we don't die for that. We don't die because of that.
Right.
I just should focus on enjoying the music or playing that I learned from them.
When you started amazing. Playing, did you ever get distracted by all the craziness going on? Did you have to be like, oh, geez, there's someone flying over my head right now?
So on Zumanity, I had a act on the stage with an aerialist. And then just a solo act, his act and me. And basically, that was a love story between us. And then he's trying to catch my eyes and flying, And then end up and we falling in love.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes he was like flying and then, oh, shoot.
So that people understand, I just want to stop this for a second. Because my buddy Mikey, I learned about being an aerialist, not me personally. Because he was in Cirque du Soleil. I saw him perform with Britney Spears. And when she did one of her tours, it was like Cirque du Soleil. She like... Oh, Cirque du Soleil is awesome. Let's just do that for my tour. And she had all these aerialists and like all these special martial artists. And people don't realize, like they don't. So like my buddy, just to tell you what he did, like he would form a chair with another man holding his body like this, dropping from the ceiling with nothing else other than holding his own weight. And Britney Spears would sit on top of these men like a chair. And sing this song, Ooh, Ooh, Baby, which is quite dirty, may I add. And she would come down from the ceiling. And then when she got down to the safe place near her sofa that was set up perfectly, my friend would sit there and he would start dancing as she's like kind of up on top of him. But then that wasn't enough. He would go and hold himself sideways. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to do a pull-up or a push-up. I mean, like, hold your body out sideways perfectly.
Yeah, the strength of those guys is insane.
So when I went and saw Cirque du Soleil the first time, I went in going, this music's amazing. And by like the third act, I didn't even hear music. I'm just like watching these maniacs like dislocate their arms and move backwards. And because it's just like a different world. It's like when you walk backstage and you see these aerialists and they see you, are they like, it's crazy what you do on the cello? And you're like, holy crap, how did you do that backflip and not die?
Yeah, it's amazing to watch them like every night. Definitely, yeah. That was fun.
You mentioned that there was like an actual storyline, you know. So how much acting is involved while you're performing your parts?
So basically, when we walk into the stage, we're coming from like this side and this side, I'm this side, and then he's show up this side. We are seeing a little bit, but ignore. And I started playing the cello, and he was like, so like a whole, like a, from top till the end, it's just acting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like acting, you know, performing.
Yeah. So I act like I like your music, or maybe they just really like it. Yeah. It's soothing my soul immediately.
Yeah, but, so it's very fun, you know, create, you know, we talk about maybe timing a little bit. We should do with different timing, you know, meet each other. Like, we never did, or I never did in Japan, like, you know, those stuff, just only playing the music. So that was new too. And then when I was like, was Michael Jackson's Immortal Tour, the music stage producer said, okay, just act like, you know, your cello is like your partner, just being sexy and then, you know, just falling in love with cello.
Well, in the words of Rod Stewart, less is more.
Well, he was talking about clothing.
Oh, okay.
I think in this case, more is more.
It was also a double entendre, but not really.
No, but that's interesting that you brought that up. Can you talk more about some of the differences between the Michael Jackson tour and the residency? Because I feel like there Cirque du Soleil is such a huge mechanism. I feel like there's so many people, there's a lot of coaching and the makeup and everything. What sorts of things were different in the residency show? Like, how was that like a different experience than the tour?
So tour, we have like maybe 3 or 4 shows in a week. Sometimes, especially in America, we perform 2 nights and then go to the next cities, right? But in a residence show, the stage is right there. So we have 10 shows a week, which is 2 shows a, you know, per day and then 2 days off a week. So it's kind of challenging to keep our mind like fresh because we're doing the same music all the time, like every night. So I had a good moment with my dad act with Aerialist because that music, half of the time was improvisation. So whatever I want, I could play so that there's a space for me. But other songs, just same. So we have to keep, you know, the freshness in our mind to, yeah. Of course, the audience shows, you know, sees our performance at the first time. Yeah. We have to perform, feel like it, we are playing the first time.
Yeah.
Kind of challenging.
It is, yeah. I think that's something that a lot of people that aren't performers don't think about. Because, like, yeah, and you know, even with Star Set Tour, it's like we do it so many days in a row and you get to the middle or, like, 3/4 of the way through and you're like, oh, how do I keep up the energy? And you really have to, like, push yourself to treat every audience like it's the first time you're doing it. And that's its own challenge.
Well, that's
sure.
Funny that you say that because one of the first things you said about this lovely lady ambassador of Japan, may I add, is that she played like a virgin maybe with Madonna. You played with Madonna. Is this a thing? Was this real?
Yeah, well, let's talk about it. How did that, I guess we'll skip ahead a bit. So how did the
opportunity with
Madonna?
Well, I just
want
to get to the meat and potatoes before we lose it because I could keep asking. You need to come back. We have so many questions. It cannot be contained in the period of time. And furthermore, I'm going to say this right now. If you'd ever want to jam with Corey, myself, and Siobhan, we're doing lots of things that require cello. So to have you, Susanna, and Siobhan, maybe a viola in there, one of you guys could figure it out, maybe put it through a Kemper. Oh my God! I'm so excited.
2020 is just actually one big job
interview.
Yeah,
it's basically a giant ass.
We're just trying to con people into joining our band.
It's basically, like, we just got Steve Wood, our British ambassador, has officially come on as our executive producer. He's like, I'll get you, Miles Kennedy. I'm like, do you want to be an executive producer? He's like, Betty, I could do that so well. Yeah. And then he continues to tell me about how he gets other people to do what he wants by making them smile and think it's his idea. And I'm like, you're working for me and then thanking me for being awesome at it. Continue working, Steve. And he's executive producing the show right now. I love him. He literally is my spirit animal, but I just love the fact that, like, we're doing exactly what he, like, out of his book, page 1, forward.
So anyway, so the original question was, let's talk Madonna. About Madonna. So how did that happen?
So Michael Jackson, the Motor World Tour music director, is actually working for Madonna too. And he saw my performance in Florida and he remembered me. Mm-hmm. And then so 2017, I got a phone call from him. And then Madonna was going to perform in Las Vegas for Billboard Award. Are you interested in? And then I said, oh, of course. And that was like the first time I met Madonna. We did a rehearsal in New York for a week.
What was that like? Like when she walks into a room, because you gotta take a, you're just casual about everything. You're like, yeah, so me and Mo are just like hanging out at the spa afterwards. And I was like, yeah, I'm in Japan. She's like, I like Japan. Did she, I feel like.
You already asked the question, Ben. You can stop now.
So when I first time, like, you know, I met her, of course, you know, nice to meet you. And then. Great thing about her is she reminds that our names sounds like the obvious, but it's hard for the celebrities because they are working for many, many, many people, right? But she was trying to remember our names. Of course, that at that moment we didn't have much musicians, just four strings and then one keyboard and then two background singers. But so nice to meet Mariko, and then. Actually, she is a very funny person and she's very smart. She was like trying to sit down on the chairs. Oh, Mariko, do you have a tattoo? And I said, no. Have you ever arrested? That was like a hard question.
Have you ever been arrested? Questions.
I was like, and at that moment, I didn't know.
She's like, do you have drugs?
Arrested. I was like, what does he mean? I was like super confused. I was like, like that. So that was the first moment with her. And then so we had a 1 week rehearsal. That song was like not her original song because that was a tribute moment for Prince.
You played the Prince tribute? So wait a minute, so you're now playing Michael Jackson and now you're playing Prince with Madonna. So Corey and I we covered Billy Idol and never even released it. And you're like, yeah, so I come back and I'm doing like the ultimate tribute with the giant.
If you start comparing our guests to us, they're all going to look phenomenal.
No, I know, but so. I'm just saying, like, I got to put this in perspective that by 8, she's already dwarfed me. Now she's like the CERN super collider. Okay, continue.
Oh my God. Yeah, but what I'm doing is just nothing, you know, just didn't change anything. Just, I got a chance to work with them. What they did, it's not totally not related with me, you know. Just I'm just playing the music, you know, cello. What they did, it's amazing. You know, they have so much career. And I appreciate with that.
What Prince song? What Prince song did you do with Madonna? I didn't see that.
So that was like a Billboard Award 2017 in the Las Vegas T-Mobile Arena. And then we did that one. And then...
But what was the song? What Prince song? Do you remember? Or can you just hum it to me?
Nothing compares with me.
Nothing compares to you?
I will talk to you. Yes, not with me.
That's adorable. You played it at the Billboard Awards with Madonna. You're like, it's the song that goes like, nothing. Nah, nah. It's a C sharp. It's a C sharp. That's amazing.
It's a difficult part, yes.
Nothing compares to you with Madonna, the Billboard Music Awards 2017. That's you. I'm going immediately after this. I'm going to go put that on my recording studio and watch you on all three of my screens with Madonna.
Oh, thank you.
But this eventually led to a full tour with Madonna. So can we talk about how that happened? So you did this, the Music Awards, this one show.
Yeah, but at the same moment, I was working for Zumanji. So just afterwards, I just went back to Zumanji. And then I left Cirque du Soleil with Zumanji 2018. And then I restarted to working with Star Set. That's why we went to Japan and then we did a Europe thing. And after that, 2019, February, I believe, from the same music director, I got a phone call. Are you available this year? And I was like, Yeah, maybe. It's such a long talk.
What kind of a question is that? That's like,
right, how's your schedule look?
Just started. Depends.
Like, maybe, yeah. And then, you know, then we didn't hear anything. Oh, I didn't hear anything like for 3 months. I was like, oh, okay, what's going on? And then in May 2019, so please come to England in 2 weeks. We're going to have a rehearsal or workshop for Madonna tour, new tour. And I was like, oh, shit, because I'm going to Japan in a few days. And afterwards, I have to go to England. But I made it. And that was actually, the name was a workshop. But actually, that was an audition type of the, you know, workshop. So she already created a new album. And then based on it, that album, she was going to the new tour. So in her head, you know, mind, she already had a, what kind of the situation she wanted to have. It's a theater shows, but she was not sure what kind of people will be on the stage, what kind of people she wanted to have. So there's a many dancers when I went to the workshop, many dancers, and then many choirs, and then us, I think, musicians. And we did a rehearsal like 11 days. And that was, to be honest, super stressful. Because she was kind of on the edge, because she didn't figure out yet what she wanted to, you know, I think the picture she had a little bit, but...
Wait, hold on, but what's that like? Because when you hear about Madonna, you hear about someone like Prince, like, you know, Madonna was originally a choreographer, okay? And she, like, she's all, and you have a lot of these people that walk into these tours and you have these technical designers and, like, you know, like, here you go, you have the choreographers. What's it like watching a genius like Madonna, like one of the greatest performers of our time, like, work through a tour?
Great thing about her is she's organized everything from, like, songs, even picking up the note, like tones. We spend a lot of time to decide the tone of piano.
And she was involved in every one of those like aspects?
Wow. Yes. So even the cello, I got a like a sort of moment of, end up like a two songs, three songs, but during the workshop, I had a sort of moment, one song. That was like a based on the a capoeira traditional song and also, you know, her style. Mm-hmm. So combine the traditional music and then her style. And the end of that song, I had a cello moment, just a solo cello. But that was for the record, on the record, that was not actual by cello. That was a MIDI sound. And she wanted to have like not kind of similar note, like a similar tone with that sound.
This is, hold on, that's
we've
crazy.
We've heard this before.
No, because yeah. There's this guy, Shota, that showed up randomly at one of our Lost Symphony sessions, and he was working with Jason Becker, who we love. It's one of the greatest guitarists in the world. We've helped raise money for him, and he's just a phenomenal inspiration because he has Lou Gehrig's disease. And where was I going with this, Siobhan?
Making it sound more like the MIDI.
He was working off pre-production, yeah.
Yeah, so Shota had to go, I think, to Sarajevo, Bosnia to work with a whole orchestra. And Shota, has done the music for Final Fantasy, where he's worked with the whole orchestras, and he goes and performs with whole orchestras and combines rock music and orchestral music, but for video games, which is an obvious thing. But because the guy that works with Jason Becker, because he has Lou Gehrig's disease and literally has to blink and look into an eye, like a box in certain areas of his eyes to dictate what he wants to do, this guy programs it all in MIDI because he's his interpreter. He's not a musician. So when he went to Sarajevo, this guy was trying to be like, okay, well, this doesn't sound like the MIDI, when there's like this natural drop off of an orchestra. So the whole time, he's going out of his mind because he's trying to reverse engineer.
Yeah, he's like, can you get the real people to sound more like a computer, basically. Yeah. But I don't know if that is that the same thing, because are you saying that the sound on the record wasn't even a cello?
Yes.
Like a music producer did it on purpose, because, of course, he knows about music a lot.
It's program MIDI. It's a MIDI library.
Music players, like cello players, but he didn't use. He just used a, you know, he's very good at the, put on the effects on the, you know.
Yeah, so it was a very processed sound.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he did on purpose on record, but at the same time, you know, she had a me on the tour. So she wanted to replace something. Mm-hmm. But so first I played by acoustics and she said, and keep going. And I did it 2 days or 3 days. And then, but just sounds different. Of course, it's acoustic and MIDI different, right? And then, okay, then what about the electric cello? And then, you know, put on the many effects and da da da. And she didn't say anything like for another 5 days. But immediately, like last 2 days, yeah, but just, I feel like different. I was like, oh, no. And then end up playing by acoustic, but I feel like, you know, she's very smart and then she's a queen. So she never says like, oh, that's amazing. That sounds fantastic. Or, you know, even doesn't say, oh, she's, yeah, that sounds okay.
You're not great at imitating MIDI with your cello. How dare you not be able to do the velocity that some producer set in a studio?
She expects perfection. So if you're doing perfection, then you're just doing your job.
But she should just, what she should have done, and here's, like, tell Mo this next time, is put you on stage, have you do what you do, and then just play it on a fucking iPod back, the exact solo, and you can just imitate it. You'll just be like, these are the exact notes. I'll play that, but just play the stupid fucking version from the goddamn track so that I can just be what you want. That's what you want. You want me to be a machine? Make me a machine. I'll just imitate it for you. And you'll love it every night.
Yeah, but I think, to be honest, like by electric cello, that phrase was not working well. So I think it's what she said was like, yeah, correct. And then we put a little bit effect on the cello and then it worked well. So I think she had some like image, like strong image for that, and when my sound fit with that image, she didn't say anything and then keep going. So I think she's very picky for everything, even like a question wise. We had, so Half of Dancers was not able to going to the tour because just the space wise and also her picture wise. And we had a costume on each act. So for me, like, I think 5 or 6 dresses, you know, I had. And then she, you know, she came up to us and, okay, this is like this. This can be more short. And she did everything. So it took time a lot. So rehearsal afterwards, like after the workshop, we did a rehearsal, actual rehearsal, from July 1st until I think September or more, like almost like September. And we started in the middle of September, we started the show.
Wow.
And then rehearsal was a little bit insane too. We started from maybe 2 or 3 p.m., but she comes around 7 or 8 p.m. And then until 4 or 5 a.m. every day. So
it's a lot. I remember you being on kind of crazy, like, late night hours, even with the shows, you know, that was sometimes very late, right? Like,
can we point out a similarity? Because there's a lot. So you did this is actually, and again, a synchronicity, because Madonna sounds a lot like what I've heard about Prince, because with Prince, when he used to play, and you played a Prince song, he used to play, he'd do the same thing with the band. They'd play the show. And then after the show, and after everyone took everything down, he'd sit the band down and he'd watch the videotape or the laser disc or whatever the fuck it was from that night, and basically sit down and watch the entire show with them. Post-game and be like, this is where you fucked up. This is where you need to go faster. This is where you didn't move right. Like, you didn't sashay when you were supposed to shantay. Like, are you serious? Like, this is a part. Why aren't you buffaloing while you're playing guitar and playing keyboard at the same time? And he would do that every night. And he'd even sometimes dock people money if they weren't professional enough or kick them right off the tour. And that sounds like Madonna, where she's so much of a micromanager, but that, again, if she wants it done right, she's got to do it herself, which is sounds like a tedious process, but, you know, was the tour good? Was the show, was the end product as good as she hoped it would be, you think?
I think she was satisfied with, you know, what we did and then what she did, of course. We had a good reviews from the audience and then on the Rolling Stones online news. And also she made a big income, I think. And also, you know, what I wanted to say. Yeah, so she was very picky. And then, for example, the day before the show, that was like the last day of the rehearsal. We started from 11 a.m. until that was like 7 a.m. Because she was not happy with, we did a two run through. First of all, we did a sound check again, and then we did a two run through. And afterwards, when we done the second run through, that was 5 a.m. And I thought, okay, we finally can go home, or we can go home to the hotel. But suddenly, you know, dance director said, oh, we need to come back. You guys need to come back. So, you know, I think basically she was not happy with our visuals on the stage. We didn't fit with, that was like well done though. Like on the theater, we have like a structure of the stage, and then behind that, they have like special effect by, mm-hmm. like, I don't know what's called, but a projector thing. So she was not happy with that. And then we did the two more songs run through, and we finished around 7 a.m.
Oh my gosh. And you had a show the next
day? Did she sit there the whole time?
Yes, she was there. So because she needed to see that. You know.
So at least you got to respect her for still being like, you know what? I know I got to open tomorrow night, so I guess I'll just stay up all night till these fucking people get my mind perfectly and imitate that fucking MIDI and project that shit all over the place, because if you can't see what's in my mind, we're going to sit here for another round.
Yeah, so I think it's that for some people... It was a very stressful, very challenging. As a musician, is also challenging, but we had a great, great music director who was working for Madonna for a long time, and they're good friends. He basically like translated her words to us. You know, sometimes the artists use a very...
Can you give us an example?
But before you do, so just for our listeners and viewers, like, so a music director, we've gone over this, I think, once or twice in previous episodes, but they're kind of the overseer of all the musicians and the sound of the show, so that the artists can worry about, you know, the actual show and the holistic thing. So continue. Sorry.
Oh, thank you so much for the, yeah. You know. So his name is Kevin Antunes, and he basically, Madonna says, for example... I don't like it. Just one word. Then music director just immediately, okay, then how about this? How about this? He changed something on his keyboard. He suggests his idea. He suggests to us to play, okay, so then for example, Mariko, what if you play not on the, that note, this note, or like this direction? And then, okay, then play. And she liked it. Like, you know, she's like a very quick response to her reactions.
Yeah.
And then one time I said to him, like during workshop, you know, I was struggling with like my solo moment for the tone wise. And I said to him, oh my God, I feel nervous. You know, every time I play, she's watching like this. No smiling.
It just sounds horrifying.
Yes. It's very like, you know,
the intimidating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Queen sitting there and then like this. It's very nervous. You know, 1,000 people is watching me. It compared with like one piece, you know, Queen's like watching like this. So I said to him like that, and it's almost like an audition every day. But he said, can you imagine I feel that way every day, more than 10 years?
So hold on, I have a very important question. After being in Star Set and after working with Madonna, who was scarier, Dustin or Madonna?
I mean, yeah, both.
So wait, hold on.
No, but I see a lot of parallels. I definitely with the not
because
not
Dustin
to interrupt you.
Sounds like he's literally just as maniacal, and then if he had the budget, and this is why I love Dustin. So this is no smite, because the man is a goddamn genius. He literally, like, he sees the future. He set the bar so high that it's obnoxious. He's like, if we're gonna play a theater, we might as well be playing a stadium in the theater. Like, he's like, I'm gonna create a crazy set that's just gonna change colors and make people appear, disappear, go be cute and what. And he, yeah. And
if
I
you
want
to hear
like
what he actually said, you can go back a couple episodes, yeah, and listen to his interview.
But I feel like if he had the budget that Madonna had and he could just import you, he would sit there and be like, but to everyone, the whole thing, like, get the aerialist out here to do it every time she plays the cello, so that the aerialist gets mad at you if you don't flat the 13, and you could just sit there the whole time she'll just be. But that's what Dustin would do. He'd be like, now make it more like surreal with the DMX.
And this he would is do the thing.
And literally for 3 days, you'd be there for 72 hours. And he'd be like, still drinking coffee. All right. I feel like it's the wrong color, but we're close.
But I love the people who has a very strong vision on their mind. Especially that was an artist. I would love to work with them because they have like certain vision, and then most of the time that's amazing. And then when I work with them, I'm trying to fit with their imagination, or I'm trying to suggest which could be beyond their mind or their image. That I think that is our job. And then I'm trying to do my best for that. Doing my own solo stuff, that is just me, or, you know, just what collaboration stuff project. Just that's different. Just I can be me, you know, just make my own world.
Can you talk a little bit about your solo material?
Oh, thank you. So I'm doing I'm releasing my solo album and also making some music videos based on just having fun, you know, just my favorite things to do. I'm composing from my, since I was a child, I love reading books. So when I would compose something, it's coming from my image. So that's my favorite, you know, if I had the free time, I'm just sitting down, you know, in the studio and I'm creating, you know, the songs. And
who's your inspiration, though, as far like when you're your composition? Because it's interesting, because Siobhan, I feel like to make her compose, like we have to like pull it out of her. She's like, but no, it needs to be written on the paper and told me how to play, because Dvorak wouldn't have it this way. And like
she's gotten better over the past few years.
No.
Yeah, well,
Siobhan's
a
goddamn prodigy. She just need, but we needed to coax her into like realizing that she's a prodigy. You're saying that you sit, do you sit down and compose? And if you do sit down, or if you do like just sit and compose, who was like the inspiration to be like, hey, you know what? I like this. I want to imitate this. Or I want to get this sound. Like, what makes you want to write music?
Mainly like on the making a story in my mind, and then image. That is my inspiration. So sometimes I said sitting down in the studio, but sometimes I'm just walking in the park or just going to the, you know, mountains, and then composing in my head, making the rhythm or riff or the melody.
So you hear it in your mind, like you can like hum it in your mind, and you just come back. So like it's not like I listen to Chopin and that's just like, you know, my style. You walk in the park and all of a sudden you hear
you're composing like a soundtrack to your life. It sounds like you're walking around hearing music in your head,
and then you just go and get a Grammy for Top Gun. Like, holy shit! I gotta go check this out. I want to know what your mind sounds like.
Well, you can definitely go on her YouTube, on Spotify. I mean, she's incredibly creative.
We can go on a walk in the park cathartically, like with you.
Yeah. A walk in the Mariko Park.
Yes, I love walking in the park, yes. Mainly just inspiration is coming from nature, from my experiences, my feelings, someone's feelings, someone's stories. That's basically coming from. Yeah.
And when you are writing, are you writing instrumentally? What's the actual pieces you're composing? Are you writing holistically, like are you doing a quartet? Are you doing multiple instruments? Like, do you do percussion? How much do you expand your ideas out that way?
I'm trying to do everything because I don't have any music directors. I don't have arrangers, so I'm doing everything by myself. But strings arrangement is not so super hard for me because I'm just doing percussion part or guitar part. That's super hard because not my occupation. So sometimes I made a scratch by MIDI.
I'm just gonna tell you right now, if you ever need drums, Paul Lorenzo and I will work for free and send you drums. If you ever need guitars, Corey or myself, I'm sure, I'll just send it to me and I'll do whatever you want.
Really?
Because I would be such an honor.
We'll help you out. That'd be fun.
All day long. Because in the other room, so you understand, one of the things that, like, my value propositions to people that are as amazing as you is that I have a crazy drum set with an insane amount of drum mics. And Paul Lorenzo, who did all the drums for Lost Symphony that Siobhan, myself, and Corey play in, who's an absolutely Jedi level drummer, we can go in there and it's already set up. Like, spend hours so I can just press record, take your song, and he can, like, drink one cup of coffee and be like, all right. And most likely he's going to send you 90% of what you want in the first time.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. I mean, that would be awesome.
Oh, my God. We want to collaborate with you. This is why we did the show. It's because we just want to get to people like you and be like, please, please, please let us help you. Please just put our name on something. Please let us play with someone this talented.
I appreciate it if you guys, you know, could help me, and that would be awesome. That is the best. Yes, definitely. Yes. Yeah.
That's hard. That's definitely, but to echo what you said, that's hard. I mean, even, and I haven't done anything solo to the level that Mariko has in terms of recording, but that, yeah, for me, I get fragments of ideas that are usually violin focused, and then it's really hard to, dive into instruments that I don't play, like guitar. Like, I don't know how to, I mean, I can try to write a drum part, but it usually is super basic and boring.
You mean like Brian writing string parts that don't make any sense to you? You're like, right, this is not proper at all. You can't play this on a violin.
Like, well, it's hard to write for an instrument that you don't play, like a drummer, like Paul.
But Brian
will think
likes
about
to look
what
at the bottom
sense
of the screen and the top of the screen and be like, okay, we're going to make this work. Like,
yeah, I mean, like, you know, nowadays, like, MIDI sounds is awesome, but still it's different, you know, human nature's talent and also, you know.
I saw what she did there, human nature. She dropped a Michael Jackson hit in there. I love it. It's like an Easter egg. She's like, oh, I know that. That is human nature. Okay.
All right. Now that Ben's singing, we can begin to wrap this up here. So as far as what's coming up next for you, can you tell us anything we can expect to see soon? I know the world's weird right now, but, you know, recorded music or live performances, what do you have going on?
So I'm trying to finish my creation for the EP. That's my first priority. And also, I just became a freelancer after the Madonna tour. So I'm trying to get more chance to perform for any shows. That's what I'm looking for. You know, just live music is very fun.
Sure.
And of course, I love recording stuff in the studio. Or collaboration, I just want to enjoy the music.
Yeah, you're always, I mean, I can say, just being Mariko's friend, she's always doing something. She, like, puts me to shame for the amount of initiative she has. Here she is up bright-eyed at 8 a.m. ready to do a podcast.
She's probably
doing a million other things today.
So this is part of my cell. I DJ'd all night, got home at like 1:30 in the morning, and then I sent Siobhan a song from this crazy dude that, like, lives in Mexico, and he's like one of the most, he's a savant musician that has a string part that he's arranged, but, like, I didn't stop working on that song to 4 a.m. And then I got up at 8 a.m. to test out a bunch of stuff and to import his bass track. And I it has string parts. So like, but I'm sending them stuff even when like I'm DJing in front of people. I'm like, forward to Siobhan so she could just hear something that maybe 6 years from now she'll
meanwhile
get
your computers stop playing music and everyone's staring at you because you're on your phone.
It did it not when I was on my phone, but yes.
No, but yeah, I mean, we're super excited to hear it. Do you have like a estimation when the EP will be ready, or is it just kind of as you know, just kind of going at your own pace?
Kind of right now it's the own pace.
Okay.
But hopefully by this year.
Yeah, let us know.
Send me the
obviously
drums.
We'll promote it.
Yeah, we would definitely share it. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
And if you need any help, you know, finishing it, hit us up.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Literally, no problem. Like, I only have 180 something guitars, and we all have studios, as you can see. So, and Paul's an amazing drummer, and he loves original stuff. So if I'm like, "Hey, Paul, play Wagon Wheel," he'll be like, "Please kill me." But if I'm like, "We have this amazing cellist who played with Madonna, but doing Prince, who's his favorite, by the way," he'll be like, "Sold," and he'll just go in there and be like, "She wants me." Meanwhile, yes. Like he's like, you know, like, "Oh, I got to sell 7 tickets to like this show, so like this is the best thing that'll ever happen to us."
Aww, it was nice to hear that. Thank you so much for trying to help me, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for
and
taking
it's so
the
great
time.
To. It's great to hear your story too, because you know, even amazing. Like on this last Star Set tour, I had so many people come up to me and say like, "Oh, it was so great to listen to your podcast and hear the stories of all the people." Because you know, the Star Set fans, they love to hear any tidbit about anyone that ever touched an instrument with Star Set.
They're gonna be so mad that we didn't talk enough about Star Set.
Yeah, no, but it's so great to hear your story, and it's a lot of, you know, a lot of people don't get to know that because they see us play and they kind of have to, you know, assume based on what we share on social media what we're like, and it's really nice to get to hear your journey and, you know, some of the struggles and some of the things that inspired you, because I think that's what makes us better artists and better musicians is, you know, those stories that we can share.
Oh yeah, you're through music or words. Sweet, and thank you so much for having me, and that was like great time to me.
Oh, know, good. Those I'm so 2 hours.
Our pleasure. Make sure that you guys, we'll have all the links below. But yeah, the videos on YouTube, Instagram.
Marico Cello, right?
Marico Cello.
It's spelled MARIKOC as in CeeLo Green, ELLO. So it's an A if you're technically Spanish.
There you
perfect.
Go.
Thank you.
Check out 2020-D.com for more episodes. Like and subscribe, and we will see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of 2020. Please visit 2020-D.com. Like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is from episode number 94, featuring Matt Bashand of Shadows Fall and Living Wreckage. Check it out.
And then he put section 318. He just looked up in the back out of the wall of this arena to see a bunch of empty seats. There's like 2 people sitting in the back. Because like I said, the doors had just opened. They're patting everybody down. There's nobody in there. So I was like, section 318, you guys are louder than the PA up there. And you can see 2 guys looking at each other like, what? But I do believe my favorite one, however, was he said, "Well, let me tell you something. I want to send this song to all the guys out there, because Eddie's Kiss is going to be sleeping with your girlfriend after the show. It's called Tears of Fire."
You know, like it was ridiculous.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.